Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
The Malian government and Tuareg rebels are meeting for peace talks, and a new study indicates there's a higher death toll in the CAR. I'm Frances Alonso reporting from Washington. Representatives of Mali's government and ethnic Tuareg separatists have begun peace talks in neighboring Algeria. The talks in Algiers today are aimed at drawing a roadmap for negotiations leading to a final peace agreement. Mali has struggled to regain stability since a 2012 coup in Bamako that allowed Tuareg groups and later Al-Qaeda-linked militants to seize control of the country's north. French-led forces drove out the Islamists last year. However, the violence has continued. African Union mediators are among the groups helping to facilitate the peace talks. A new survey indicates the number of people killed during the height of the Central African Republic conflict has been underestimated. Doctors Without Borders says a survey of thousands of CAR refugees in neighboring Chad finds that nearly 2,600 people were killed in the unrest between November 2013 and April of this year. Relief organizations previously estimated that between 1,000 and 2,000 people died in fighting between the mostly Muslim ex-Seleka rebels and mostly Christian anti-Balaka militias. Ink prints of the late Nelson Mandela's hands and photos of the anti-apartheid icon with former pop star Michael Jackson are among the items that go on sale Thursday in Johannesburg. Officials at the Stephen Welts Auction Company say more than 200 lots linked to Mr. Mandela will be up for bids, including many items signed by the late South African president. Organizers say the entire collection is valued at more than $400,000. Some of the auction proceeds will go to two charities. The auction takes place on the eve of Mr. Mandela's 96th birthday anniversary. The Philippine government is focused on cleaning up debris, and after a strong typhoon cut across the northern island of Luzon today, affecting the capital and killing at least 10 people. Now the storm heads toward the contested parts of the South China Sea. From Manila, Simone Orendine reports.
Typhoon Ramasun blew from the southeast corner of Luzon to the Manila capital region on Wednesday with winds between 150 and 185 kilometers per hour. Its gusts knocked out power, tore roofs off houses, and uprooted trees, leaving piles of broken branches and downed power lines on the roads. Philippine civil defense officials say close to 400,000 people living in vulnerable areas or along waterways were affected. Schools, government, and private businesses were shuttered. Simone Orendine for VOA News, Manila.
A Malaysian-flagged oil tanker has been hijacked in the South China Sea and its cargo siphoned. VOA correspondent Steve Herman has details.
The Royal Malaysian Navy says 15 crew members aboard the drifting MT Oriental Glory are safe after the tanker was hijacked and 2,500 tons of marine gas oil were stolen from the vessel. The 85-meter-long ship was en route to Sandakan in Malaysian Borneo from Singapore when it was attacked just before midnight. The pirates damaged the ship's communication equipment and engine. This is the ninth such hijacking since late April. Steve Herman, VOA News, Bangkok.
Secretary of State John Kerry is meeting with President Barack Obama and Vice President Joe Biden to discuss the latest round of talks on Iran's nuclear program. The State Department says today that Kerry will brief them on his conversations in Vienna amid signs world powers and Iran will seek to extend the deal-making process beyond the July 20th deadline. The United States deported 38 children and their mothers to Honduras this week, and the first of what it promises will be regular flights sending illegal Central American immigrants back to their homelands. But the U.S. is finding it difficult to cope with the growing influx of thousands of children, sometimes with their mothers and sometimes alone, who are making the long and dangerous trip from Honduras, Guatemala, and El Salvador. Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has been sworn in for a new 7-year term following an election the opposition and its Western allies have dismissed as a sham. He took the oath of office today during a ceremony at the presidential palace in Damascus. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
A new report by UNAIDS says it is possible to end the AIDS epidemic by 2030 if millions of marginalized people can get life-saving treatment for HIV.
That's Lisa Schlein reporting from Geneva, where a report is being launched in advance of next week's International AIDS Conference in Melbourne, Australia. Details coming up.
Also in the news, Nigerian security forces have taken custody of a former Army intelligence officer who is accused of masterminding a bombing in the capital. And the government of Mali and rebel groups begin meetings today in Algiers to hash out a final peace arrangement.
We'll have these stories, plus the sunny side of sports with Sunny Young, music from Kenya, and our daily features. So stay with us. There's lots more ahead on African News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Nigerian security forces have taken custody of a former Army intelligence officer who is accused of masterminding a bombing in the capital that killed dozens of people. Heather Murdoch reports from Abuja.
In the early hours of April 14th, the Nyanya bus station on the outskirts of Abuja was filled with commuters headed to the center of town for work when two bombs detonated. At least 71 people were killed and hundreds more injured. The blasts were the first in the capital in 2 years, and by far the most deadly in the city's history. Nigerian security forces arrested 5 suspects in May, saying 2 others, the masterminds, were at large. State Security Services spokesperson Marilyn Auger says one of those suspects, Aminu Sadiq Oguche, was returned to Nigeria on Tuesday.
Security forces took delivery of Aminu Sadiq Oguche, who has been extradited from the Sudanese government and has been taken into custody by security forces. Investigation is going to continue, and I think very soon he will be charged to court also.
Oguche is the British-born son of a retired Nigerian army colonel. He has previously been arrested on terrorism-related charges. Officials say the arrest is a major win for the Nigerian security forces, which have been criticized heavily for failing to rescue more than 200 girls kidnapped in the north on the same day as the Nyanya bombing. Militant group Boko Haram claimed responsibility for the bombing and the kidnapping of the girls. The group says it wants to impose a strict version of Islamic law on Nigeria and has been blamed for thousands of deaths this year alone. Since the Nyanya bombing, 2 other bombings in Abuja have claimed dozens of lives and raised fears that Boko Haram's reach is expanding beyond the northeast, where 3 states have been under emergency rule for more than a year. This is Nigeria National Information Center coordinator Mike Omeri.
Fight against insurgency and the effort to get our girls back is top priority of the government of Nigeria. Besides that, this is also evident that the armed forces of Nigeria and security services and all agencies are working hard to put this thing behind us as a nation.
Another alleged mastermind of the bombing, Rufai Abubakar Siga, remains missing, and the Nigerian government has offered a $150,000 reward for information leading to his arrest. Heather Murdoch for VOA News, Abuja.
The Mali government and rebel groups begin meeting today in Algiers to hash out a final peace arrangement a year after returning to democracy. The talks, which include African mediators, come amid this month's escalation of violence in the north in violation of a May ceasefire. Meanwhile, French President François Hollande is expected in West Africa later this week to flesh out his new counter-terrorism strategy in the Sahel, which will replace the current French troop presence in northern Mali. Catherine Hayat in Bamako reports.
Violent clashes and suicide attacks continue to plague northern Mali. This despite French military intervention, elections and international mediation following a 2012 military coup which led to the country being torn apart by separatists. In May, Mali's army suffered an embarrassing defeat at the hands of Tuareg separatists after an attempt to seize their stronghold Kidal. Last week, More than 35 people were killed in clashes between the MNLA rebels, the National Movement for the Liberation of Azawad, and the MAA, the Arab Movement of Azawad. On Monday, a suicide attack against the French army patrol killed one soldier and injured six. The talks in Algeria are the first real effort to bring Mali's factions together to draw a roadmap on how to resolve differences. President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita has signaled he is willing to compromise, but has ruled out any final deal which threatens Mali's territorial integrity or secularism. To underscore this, Al-Qaeda-linked Islamist separatist groups, which occupied northern Mali in 2012 before being ousted by a French military offensive, have been excluded from negotiations. Mediators from the African Union, the AU, among other African groups, will be facilitating these difficult talks. Issaka Soare, the special advisor to the head of the AU mission, tells VOA he's optimistic.
The African Union, in conjunction with other regional ECOWAS, UN, the European Union, others, in conjunction with these actors, will do everything it can to ensure that we reach a conclusive agreement at the end of this process.
Meanwhile, France has announced an end to its 18-month military operation known as Saval, which effectively reunited Mali, but has not completely stabilized it. It will be replaced by a broader anti-terrorism operation in the Sahel region. The new operation, called Barkhane, will involve security cooperation with Niger, Chad, Mali and other border nations. It will see some 3,000 French soldiers deployed, with at least a third of them remaining in northern Mali. It will also see France assist with drones, fighter jets and other military hardware. Alain Antil heads the Sub-Saharan Africa program for the French Institute for International Relations in Paris.
La mission Barkhane va donner un peu de cohérence à la présence de troupes françaises qui sont déjà présentes.
He says Operation Barkhane uses French troupes already in Mauritania, Mali, Niger and Burkina Faso. He says the new operation will give coherence to the French military presence in the Sahel and to the regional fight against terrorism. French President François Hollande heads to West Africa Thursday with stops in Niger and Chad to hold talks with his counterparts on the operation. Catherine Heuer for VOA News, Bamako.
A new report by UNAIDS says it is possible to end the AIDS epidemic by 2030 if millions of marginalized people can get life-saving treatment for HIV. The report finds new HIV infections are at their lowest level this century, and AIDS-related deaths have fallen by one-third since 2005. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva, where the report is being launched in advance of next week's International AIDS Conference in Melbourne, Australia.
The new UN report finds tremendous progress is being made in reducing the number of new HIV infections and in keeping more people with HIV/AIDS alive. It estimates that at the end of last year, 35 million people globally were living with HIV. 2.1 million were newly infected, and 1.5 million had died from AIDS-related illnesses. Sub-Saharan Africa has the highest number of people living with HIV, followed by people in the Asia-Pacific region. The report says nearly 13 million people with HIV have access to antiretroviral treatment. But it notes millions more are denied access to these life-saving drugs because they are marginalized, criminalized, or suffer from discrimination. They include men who have sex with men, transgender people, sex workers, prisoners, and injected drug users. The report shows these people are among 19 million of the 35 million people living with HIV today who do not know they have the virus. So, says UNAIDS Executive Director Michel Sidibe, they will not seek treatment, and this will impede efforts to bring the HIV/AIDS epidemic under control.
There will be no end to the AIDS epidemic if we don't put people first and close the gap. This report gives the best data possible on people being left behind. If the 19 million people who are living with HIV don't find out their status, they will die. But if they do, they will access treatment and live full and healthy lives.
Dr. Sidibe says the world will be on track to end the epidemic by 2030 if antiretroviral treatment for millions of HIV-positive people is scaled up by 2020. But entire countries are being left behind and are facing the triple threat of high HIV burden, low treatment coverage, and no or little decline in new HIV infections. The report shows 15 countries account for more than 75% of the global burden of new HIV infections. Three countries in sub-Saharan Africa, Nigeria, South Africa, and Uganda, account for 48% of all new HIV infections. Dr. Sidibe tells VOA these countries are not progressing for several reasons.
You take countries like, I said, the Central African Republic, you have only 14% of coverage. Countries with war, countries with a lack of governance system, all health system not existing, collapse, and others. But you have Democratic Republic of Congo. Again, a major challenge, as you know, governance, issues of war, post-war, and difficulties to really reach all.
The report shows African countries are not alone in facing problems. For example, it notes HIV infections are high in the Russian Federation because people who inject drugs are marginalized and do not get the services they need. The United States is cited for its high rate of HIV infections, placing it among the top 15 countries in the world. This, the report says, is mainly due to certain critical groups, such as black women and men who have sex with men, being left behind. The report says the key to ending the AIDS epidemic lies in focusing on helping populations that are underserved and at higher risk of HIV get the treatment they need. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 17 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Nigerian security forces have taken custody of a former army intelligence officer who is accused of masterminding a bombing in the capital. And the government of Mali and rebel groups begin meetings today in Algiers to hash out a final peace arrangement. And would like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Well, Yehiz, Kenyan opposition leader Raila Odinga is accusing the government of failing to safeguard the nation following violent attacks on civilians on the nation's coast. Odinga says President Uhuru Kenyatta is using the security crisis to attack political adversaries. Odinga is a former prime minister and leader of the Coalition for Reforms and Democracy. He ran for president in the last election and was defeated by Mr. Kenyatta. More than 80 civilians from villages in Lamu County have died in raids by armed gunmen in recent weeks. Somali terrorists have claimed responsibility, but Mr. Kenyatta had denied involvement by the Al-Shabaab group. The president blames local political networks for the violent attacks. Some Kenyans see Mr. Kenyatta's explanation for the violence as an attack on Odinga and his political allies.
Some Muslim leaders in Kenya's coastal city of Mombasa have called on security officials not to harass worshippers at the Musa Mosque in Majengo. The mosque has been a magnet for police surveillance because of suspected radicalism and connections to the Somali militant group Al-Shabaab. Mohammed Yusuf has the story from Mombasa.
The drive to Musa Mosque in the neighborhood of Majengo takes a little longer these days. Due to heightened concern about security, motorists and pedestrians try to avoid the mosque in general. Inside, there are few worshippers. It is quite a contrast to the days when the mosque was so full. Many had to pray on the streets outside. Musa long had a reputation of attracting young men due to what many describe as a more liberal and intellectual open atmosphere. It is that same reputation which attracted authorities to scrutinize those preaching for radical content. Now the young avoid the mosque due to fears they will be caught in another security crackdown or being labeled terrorist sympathizers. Noor Abdallah, a 25-year-old Majengo resident, is one of them. He says he stopped praying in the mosque after a police raid, which left some people dead. He says he's too afraid it could happen again and he'll be caught up in it. That raid was in February. Kenyan security forces killed 3 people and arrested more than 100 young people, most of whom were later released by the courts. But in that raid, Kenyan security forces said they recovered an AK-47 rifle, knives, video disc and flags, which bore the symbols of Somali militant group Al-Shabaab. Kenyan authorities allege some of the Musa Mosque clerics are recruiting for Al-Shabaab among the poor young men in the rundown neighbourhood of Majengo. Sheikh Jumangao, the chairman of Kenya's Muslim National Advisory Council, argues worshippers should not be harassed because of a few individuals who are suspected of preaching hate and violence.
People who are performing prayers in the Musa Mosque should not at any given time be harassed. Even if there is one suspect or two in that mosque, it's not a reason to the government or the police to go and harass Muslims in that mosque. What they must do first, they must do their investigation before taking an action like the way they did in the previous time.
Local human rights organizations have accused Kenyan police of using heavy-handed tactics against the Muslim community, including forced disappearances and murder. Police have strongly denied the accusations and say their actions are in defense of a nation under attack from militants both inside the country and in neighboring Somalia. Abdallah says families feel they are no longer safe and some are leaving Majengo altogether. He says it is very sad to see how empty the mosque is during the holy month of Ramadan, which is a time when people especially love to go to mosque. He says even people who lived around the mosque have moved, leaving empty houses behind. Sheikh Ngao says in the past 4 months, clerics and local human rights groups have been trying to work with the mosque leadership and young worshippers there to ensure that radicalism is not part of the culture and to allay fears within border Kenya.
They were ready to quit their understanding about jihad and join the other side of the Muslim clerics and forge forward and march forward with their mission of peace.
Ngao says the message of peace needs time to sink in and the support of the holy teachers so young people can truly understand their religion in Musa and elsewhere. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Mombasa.
Well, Kenyan police discovered more than 340 kilograms of heroin hidden on a large cargo ship in the port of Mombasa yesterday. Anti-narcotics officials arrested 9 suspects aboard the stateless vessel when they detained the ship last week. The stash of heroin was discovered in the diesel tanks of the MV Bushehr Amandaria several days after an initial discovery of 900 grams of heroin hidden among bags of cement. Officials are continuing a search of the vessel. Kenya is working with security agencies in Pakistan, India, and Iran to locate the ship's owners. The detained crew included 5 Pakistanis, 2 Indians, and an Iranian. Smuggling of heroin from Pakistan and Iran to Europe has increased in recent years. East Africa's porous coast make it a popular route to major European markets. An Australian war vessel seized a ton of heroin with a market value of $268 million aboard a Dhow sailing in Kenyan waters 3 months ago.
French President François Hollande flies to Africa tomorrow on a 3-nation visit that will focus on economic issues and rooting out terrorism in the Sahel area. For VOA, Lisa Bryant has more on the trip from Paris.
Security tops the agenda of President François Hollande's trip to Africa, where he'll visit French troops and hold talks with leaders of Niger, Chad, and Ivory Coast. France has just announced a new mission to fight jihadists in the Sahel area. The operation is called Barkhane, named after a type of sand dune. Alain Onti heads a sub-Saharan African program for the French Institute for International Relations in Paris.
La mission Barkhane va donner un peu de cohérence à la présence de troupes françaises qui sont déjà présentes.
Onti notes that Barkhane makes use of French troops already in Mauritania, Mali, Niger, and Burkina Faso. He says the new operation will give coherence to the French military presence in the Sahel and to the regional fight against terrorism. Roughly 3,000 French military personnel will be involved, including about 1,200 troops who took part in the offensive against Islamists in northern Mali. On Monday, a French soldier was killed in a suicide attack near the city of Gao, underscoring the security concerns.
Les soldats français présents au Niger et l'armée nigérienne.
Analyst Antil says regional countries like Niger cooperate closely with France in security matters, but he says it's important for other players, including European countries, to be more involved. In Ivory Coast, Mr. Hollande will focus on trade and investment issues in a country whose economy has rebounded after a long civil war. In Chad, Mr. Hollande's last stop and where the Sahel operation will be based, human rights activists fear rights issues might take a back seat to security matters.
C'est-à-dire que les différents présidents, ils arrivent avec des bonnes idées.
Antil predicts Mr. Hollande will pay lip service to human rights. The socialist president promised a new relationship with Africa when he was elected. But Antil says that, like other French leaders, he's become more pragmatic in office. For African countries, even Francophone ones, France's star is fading in favor of new players like China and India. But Mr. Hollande, who launched missions in Mali and the Central African Republic, has earned respect and even popularity in some parts of the continent, the kind of support that eludes him back home in France. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
In Egypt, seven men have been sentenced to life in prison for sexually assaulting women during rallies in Tahrir Square. The Associated Press reports these are the first tough sentences handed out by a court after the government promised to crack down on sexual violence. The charges stem from four separate incidents. One attack occurred during celebrations following the inauguration of President al-Sisi in June. Two other defendants were sentenced to 2 20-year terms each.
Five emerging economic powers announced yesterday that they have agreed to build their own development bank. It will be called the New Development Bank. The BRICS nations, Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, say they'll make an initial investment of $100 billion. Their new bank would vie with the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund to serve the development needs of the world's poor. Representatives of the bank's founding countries announced tentative plans to establish the bank's headquarters in Hong Kong with a regional office in a yet-to-be-identified South African city.
Hello, I am Shaka Sali. Join me on Straight Talk Africa every Wednesday as we discuss topics of special interest to Africans, including politics, economic development, press freedom, health, social issues, and conflict resolution. Take your pick. Watch on television, log on to the internet, or listen right here on the radio.
What's going on? What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Vunganyi right here in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami. Thanks for joining us. We love to have you on board. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. Hot, hot.
Upfront is a show that explores issues
that affect your daily lives. Don't move. Don't move that dial. Get your snacks. Get your cup of tea or your cup of coffee. Put your feet up. This is Upfront. Cheers, cheers. Clink, clink.
Yeah. Now there's the youth culture that is being practiced by the youth globally.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
feel like the problem is that once the funds are sent to these developing countries, it sometimes gets in the wrong hands, and then it's the actual people that are supposed to be benefiting from these funds really never even get to see.
What does this mean for your local culture? Is it being threatened? Should your parents be worried? Let's talk. This is Upfront of the Voice of America. You can follow me on Twitter. My handle is at Upfront Africa. And remember, you can always send us an email here on the show. It's upfront@voanews.com.